This is Heather Johnson, and you're listening to the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, episode number 139, Manifestation and Spirituality, an interview with Katie Silcox. This podcast is for people who want to take their health physically, emotionally, and spiritually to a whole new level using Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing tradition from India. This is the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, and I'm your host, Heather Johnson. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the podcast today. I'm so excited to have all of you here in this beginning of the new year, a new chance for growth, opportunity, and change. And as part of that theme and energy, I've got a special guest with us today. And I'm so excited for all of you to meet her and for all of us to get to know Katie Silcox better. And if you have not heard of Katie, you will be just kicking yourself that you haven't found her sooner because she is such a light in the space of Ayurveda. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about her and then we're going to jump into a conversation that I know is going to bless all of our lives for having been a part of it today. So Katie is the New York Times bestselling author of the book, Healthy, Happy, Sexy, Ayurvedic Wisdom for Modern Women. And I have to just put a little aside here. Long before this podcast conversation ever came to be, I found this book many, many years ago, and I've loved it ever since. And it was such a good guide when I first started studying Ayurveda. So just want you all to know it's a beautiful book. Katie holds a master's degree in Hinduism and the Ayurveda sciences and is an internationally recognized teacher and a mentor to women, which is so needed in the world right now. She's written extensively on the topics of yoga, Ayurveda, sexuality, which is also definitely needed, herbalism, women's health, and has been published in Yoga Journal, Common Ground Magazine, Origin Magazine, and I'm sure many more that I can't list all here. And what I'm the most excited about is she is the founder of the Shakti School, which we're going to talk about a little bit today, that offers Ayurveda wellness coach and health counselor certification programs and other ways to get involved if you aren't going to that level at this point in your life. But that's just a little bit about Katie Silcox. I'm sure you'll get to know her much better as we chat. But Katie, thank you so much for being on here today with us.
Wow, what an intro. I feel really happy to just be with you, Heather. And yeah, looking forward to our discussion today.
Well, Katie, you're hailing to us right now from Hawaii. Is this home for you? Is this a temporary home? What brought you to Oahu? I mean, it's such a beautiful place, so much good energy, so much healing there. So what landed you on the Aloha Island?
Well, I live in Virginia, but I often find myself here at least some part of every single year lately. And one of my key teachers lives here. And so I just sort of, you know, have gravitated to being here. And, you know, it's not a bad idea to get out of Virginia in January. And, you know, my people are covered in a blizzard right now. So I sneak over to the islands during the Virginia winters.
And you guys can't see Katie right now, but she has a glowing tan. So I think she's taking good care of the sun there in Oahu and allowing the people in Virginia to get nice and pale with that snow. So I think it's interesting that you're in Hawaii right now because it's such a beautiful place for growth and birth and life to form there. And having been there, I mean, you watch the natural foliage there just takes over everything, right? And I think it's living out its dharmic purpose. It's the beginning of the year. I kind of think about Dharma a lot this time of year and what I want to create in the new year. So that's definitely something I wanted to circle around to, but I thought it might be nice for people to know a little bit about your story. How did you end up teaching Ayurveda in a way and specifically to women? Because we don't see that enough, I think. It's definitely a space that is needed.
Well, you know, I grew up Southern Baptist, and around the age of 17, I moved to Europe, and I discovered yoga when I was 19 in this sort of musty Spanish windsurfing village. I had a German teacher, an American from the South, with a German teacher in Spain teaching me Indian, you know, wisdom. We could go on and on at like the multiculturalism there. But I just remember, and I have and still do, although to a much lesser extent, really struggled with anxiety. And when I did that first yoga class, I just remember feeling like I could see better. I could see better and feel better. And there was this place in me that, and this was the first yoga class I ever took. And I'm sure you would get this, Heather, and like your listeners, like when yoga hits you or meditation hits you for the first time, it's like a honeymoon. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of pulled me into this deep honeymoon love affair with yoga. And then I worked in artificial intelligence for 7 years, and I worked with brilliant people. I learned from MIT scientists and philosophers and deep thinkers. And so I got this real education around the intellect. And yet, and I loved all my friends that I met there, but they were some really strongly addicted people, whether it be alcohol or cigarettes or drugs or prostitutes. I mean, we were in the south of Spain, so there was like every single thing you could want was available for you. And I just saw that money and power and prestige didn't really make people happy. And I was young, and they offered me a big fat raise and a bigger job. And I moved to India. Hmm. And I went all over India and got all the parasites and things to one should have when visiting in these places. And I met A.G. and Indra Mohan, who were Krishnamacharya's students. And you know, many of the listeners will know that that was sort of the father of Hatha Yoga. And Mohan and Indra were in their 60s when I met them, and I lived in their home. I mean, I stayed in a nearby place, but I was like in their living room with them every day for about a month. And they introduced me to Ayurveda, but more importantly, they introduced me to something that I think is sorely lacking in our world, and that was spiritual humility.
And interesting. I love that you said it that way, spiritual humility.
Yeah, I just made that up. Just made that up on your show, but it's such a thing. Like, and you know, I remember Mohan saying to me, you know, you're not supposed to have favorites, but I could tell he really liked me, and he would like kind of tease me in a good way, and he'd be like, you know, Katie, for you the most difficult position is Shavasana, you know, like really funny like granddad jokes. And but I came to the awareness that I really, really, really wanted to share this with the world, and I needed to be a translator, because I'm just a regular girl, you know, and I have a very scientific brain, as many of us do in the West. And so it sent me on this long, this is a long way of saying what brought me to all of this, Heather, and what keeps me in the evolution of trying to understand and experience is suffering, is pain, is suffering, but also this other part of me that lives in my heart that just really, really, really wants to love and connect to you, to the ocean, to, you know, a lover, to a cat. You know, it's just that beauty and that light, which by the time I got on the call with you, I'm like, oh, she's a sister. Like, we can feel when we're in the presence of other beings whose heart is a little bit more available. Mm-hmm. And that longing is apparent, although that longing is in everybody, right? It's just more or less covered.
I love the whole evolution of that story, because it showed so much about who you are and the growth that you've experienced. But coming back to what you said about suffering, that's where Ayurveda comes from, is that suffering that the ancients and the ancient rishis saw in the people and in themselves and wanted to be able to overcome. And what is also interesting was when you said you had a lot of anxiety, but you know, it's not as bad now, but I feel like we're always working to different levels of joy and bliss and evolution to overcome that intricate suffering that some of us tend to get mired in. And I see that with clients that come in that are so deep in it, that for them, any light shedding into their soul is like a big, huge deal, right? Just to create a little more of that space. But connection, it's all about connecting. It's the whole point of it.
Yeah, and maybe we can just offer up a new frame. And that is, I don't think that enlightenment or, you know, arrival to whatever goal, I don't really think it's what we think it is. The more I'm on the path, the more I see fear and anxiety. I mean, my God, look at our world. Pain, suffering, all of the spectrum of the emotional apocalypse that we all can live through. Like, I actually don't think that's going anywhere for me. I don't feel that I'm going to get to the end of my life and say, well, you know, I eradicated fear and anxiety and sadness and depression. Like, I think that what I'm learning how to do and what I attempt to share with my students is we're building up a field that can tolerate it and hold it. And I'm becoming more identified and able to tap into that while the anxiety comes up or the rage or the shame, oh my God, right? Like the embarrassment, like whatever, right? And that to me seems a little bit more the path of the wise woman, right? That I'm not trying to get rid of anything or become perfect.
Well, it's not even possible, which is a hard thing in the West because we're sold that if I sacrifice enough, if I even suffer enough, I'm going to reach this level of perfection, whether it's physically, whether it's financially, career-wise, but there's such a small, if any, focus on what's actually happening under the surface in the spiritual space, because it's all so externally driven. And then people wonder why they're so empty inside and why they don't feel connection. And then being isolated physically during COVID was so hard on so many people. I mean, what did you see with that? And has it changed the way that you have approached teaching?
Well, yeah. I mean, of course, we're all, so one of the principles of Ayurveda and yoga and all mysticism and, you know, Einstein and all healing is like, we think we're so separate, but we're so connected. Energy doesn't actually know boundaries. There's no boundary on prana. And so during COVID, one of my teachers used to say, you think that your fear is yours. You think that your sadness is yours or whatever we're going through is yours, but it's actually just in the collective. It's fear, capital F, whereas yours is like fear, lowercase f. And, you know, we have a year-long program. We started in 2020 in January, obviously COVID meltdown, March, April. And so it was an amazing experience to be with several hundred women all over the world whose hearts were aligned with the longing to stay connected, not only to one another. And despite we had so many women, oh my God, Heather, that were like in, you know, I lived in Virginia, so, and I don't live in a big city, so I didn't feel the effects of it the same way. But these girls were living in cities in Italy, in Europe, in New York City, in San Francisco, in New Zealand, and still now, our students from Australia. There was such a sense of loneliness because of the isolation. And yet what we were doing was A, connecting with one another, human to human, vertical realm, right? Horizontal realm. And then human to the divine and human to mama nature, the vertical realm. And I just don't know where a lot of these women would be. And I'm not saying that to brag because they tell us all the time. I feel so happy that we could provide this, but I'm selfishly saying Ayurveda Wednesday, yeah, we call it Ayurveda Wednesday, was like a touchstone to be able to tap into something that felt real in a world where the news tells you one thing one day and the next thing another thing. And you know, I'm going on and on, but this is important. The teachings predicted this, you know, and they said, you're going to be living through this time of chaos and darkness and confusion, where it's not that everyone's evil and everything's bad. It's that no one knows what the fuck is happening. And like,
amen.
And like, I'm just trying to stay in the center. And the only center that really exists is me to the divine and me to the earth. And then you and me together in this moment. That's the crucifix of Christ, right? That's the Sri Yantra. That's the Star of David. It's just me and you in this moment. And then me to the heavens and me to the earth. And I know, Heather, I can trust this moment with you, and I can trust my internal relationship with that which never will be touched. So I don't know if that answered the question, but yeah, people were freaking out, including, and I think for leadership, and you probably felt this too, there was and is this vast pressure to have an opinion.
And it's divisive no matter what your opinion is.
Right.
And it's a little scary to step into that space, because especially if you're not the party line. But what I think is really interesting is the party line is not the majority of thought, right? It's the loudest. It's the most vocal, but it's not the undercurrent of what's actually happening within, we could say, you know, consciousness, or what the thought patterns are on a widespread, but people are afraid. And I loved that you distinguished between fear with a big capital F, because I think that most of my clients I've seen have been almost paralyzed by that. And it's amplified their own fears, especially if they already had a tendency towards some of those emotions and that anxiety and that fear. And so they've needed these safe harbors. And I think Ayurveda has actually blossomed in the last 2 years much more than it would have. So, I mean, there's a positive about the trial that we've all gone through. But it was interesting. I sometimes think we separate emotions as positive, negative emotions. And so I want to feel these and I don't want to feel these. But in reality, they're all vibrational energies. This is teachings by Heather right here. So they're vibrational energies, and we're working with those energies for creating an evolution, right? And so trying to get rid of them, like you said, doesn't work, but being able to recognize the different impacts that they have and be more observant from more of a distance, instead of getting caught up in that drama that we hear about so much within the Ayurvedic yoga space, is that monkey mind and all that drama, and letting that emotion kind of rise. I always love the wave. It's just a wave. And whether it's joy, I mean, I could be having the ultimate of joy and bliss in this moment, and I don't know where that might go. So holding on and attaching to that so strongly is just as harmful as holding on and attaching to the sorrow and the grief, because both are transient. So being able to be with them and know that this is a beautiful moment, no matter what that moment is, whether it's the joy of, you know, something amazing, like a great interaction with your partner, or if it's the feelings that arise when, you know, you see sadness or sorrow in one of your children or someone you love, but both of them are just, they're just energy that's coming through, that prana. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, you framed it really beautifully. My friend had on a t-shirt the other day and it said, "Relax, nothing's under control." And you know, to me, I was like, you should give me that t-shirt. But to me, the emotions are energy in motion, and they are very much the kind of, they are the goddess, right? They are her wildness. They are her movements and her expressions. And when you try to control a wild goddess riding a tiger, she's gonna bite your head off. No matter which emotion it is, I think that our inability to deal with our emotional reality comes from our obsession with being in control. Mm-hmm. And the emotions, they're not under our control. They are the convergence, according to the ancient teachings, of three things, which is prana, energy, and old mind material that most often is the subconscious realm. So that's why they're uncontrollable. They're energy, which you can't control unless you can move and channel it. But they're meeting the sum total storehouse of the great swampland of the unknown of not only your mind, but your parents' mind and your grandparents' mind and the collective infinite mind. So to think, to have the hubris, I hear, especially, I love men so much, don't get me wrong, but I hear these men, they're like, "Well, I just have to keep my emotions under control." And it's like, well, of course, society teaches them that. But that's like saying, "I'm going to like put Durga in a cage." She's just laughing. She just takes one movement and burns down the whole freaking thing. And so what I'm, as you can now hear, who has a vast storehouse and of emotional range, is to really just be like, you know what? My spiritual practice is advancing into the extent to which I can just be so humbled before the mystery of how little I actually do know anything, not only about reality outside of me, but even myself. And yet there's this place that the ancient teachings speak of that I have met, that you, I'm sure, have met, Heather, that is the real me.
And aren't those beautiful moments? I don't feel like it's somewhere I get to visit as often as I'd like. It's when you know, I've really put good effort into my spiritual practice. But it is a beautiful thing to encounter that and to see the mystery behind all of it. And I it's kind of that old saying, you don't know what you don't know. And so you might think, I remember when I first started down the yogic path of study about 15 years ago, and I told my first teacher, I want to learn everything about yoga this year. She wanted to know what our goals were with our teacher training. And that was my goal. I want to learn everything about yoga, because being a very linear, very pitta, just having a lot of those tendencies, I just figured I could master this the same way I got straight A's in school. I was just going to knock this out of the park, right? Best yoga teacher there ever was, kind of thing. And it was, as I learned more, I thought, I don't know anything. And now, you know, a decade and a half later, I still am. I mean, every day is new awareness. And I think that's the point. Because if you get to where you think you know it all and you're done, you haven't even begun. And it's so amazing. I think, do you have kids, Katie?
No, I mean, not in this lifetime.
Well, maybe in the past or a future lifetime. But when in the past, when you watch,
I'm like, no, thank you. No, thank you. This time I'm going to take a break.
Well, you know what? I think we learn so much from both ways of living, but I have four kids and watching the beauty within them that they don't see. And I imagine that to be similar to spirit, being able to see the beauty within us that we have such a hard time seeing, but being able to recognize that seed potential. And especially, I've got three daughters and one son, and my daughters, I just look at them and I'm in awe. I mean, in awe of who they are and the beauty that's within them and the abilities that they have that they haven't even harnessed or realized yet. But we often need to turn the mirror around and realize we're just looking at a reflection of ourselves when we have those kinds of connected feelings between like me and them or me and you or any of our students that we work with. I think we all have that within us.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing, this idea of your children and the goddess or God looking at you, or spirit is the word you use. There's an old story about that where someone asks the teacher, you know, why is there so much suffering? Like, think about all the suffering on the planet in any given moment, you know, and we hear about it all the time. Like, it can make one think that God has forgotten about us. And the teacher said, well, you have a baby. And you know, when it started to learn how to walk and it would stand up and fall and it would cry, but you would be delighted that it was learning to walk. This is us in God's eyes, you know, and it hurts to be a baby. I mean, babies are crying all the time and they have no frame of reference. So everything feels like an emergency and a threat. And I really feel like that myself. I'm just like a baby that's just like getting up and down all the time and crying. And then, you know, and maybe, and I know, I feel more and more, there's something that's holding all of us. That's just giggling at COVID. She's giggling at our politicians. She's giggling at all of this stuff that we're all just like horrified by. Yeah.
That's a beautiful frame. Well, and you think about when a baby's learning to walk, you hold their little hands, often hold your fingers, right? And you kind of walk with them. So it's that holding, which I don't even think they're aware of it, right? Babies just naturally, it's instinctual for them to grab, to hold on. And I think there's been a lot of grabbing and holding on, not in a negative way, but in more of a, let's connect more to spirit. Let's figure out who I actually am through this experience and how am I going to grow from this? And I actually wanted to talk a little bit about that as far as what your thoughts are with manifestation, because I think that word itself is kind of a big, I mean, that's a whole subject in and of to itself. What is manifestation? And then how that ties in with connecting with our spirit, because I think for me in the beginning, I always thought manifestation was more like a physical, like I'm going to see a physical result from something that I created or an intention that I made. It's going to manifest in reality. And I think it does happen that way, but it has to have that tie in with the spirit. So is that something that you teach in your school? I just wanted to see if that's, what are your thoughts? Let's talk about this.
Sure. It's juicy. I mean, yes, we do a whole several classes on this. And so I've studied the tantric arts of manifestation. That's my title around it. and a lot of the kind of Gnostic and early Christian spiritualists. And most of our listeners probably aren't aware that many, many, many of our ancestors were Christian spiritualists. That got kind of erased from the history. There was a time where I can't remember the exact statistic. It was like one out of every seven person in the United States in like the 1920s was a spiritualist. And that's like basically saying like a new age California yogi type. I mean, they were like manifesting and they were calling in spirits and they were talking with the dead and they were working with energy and they were protecting their aura. I mean, this was our legacy. And I guarantee listeners out there, you've got an ancestor that was a spiritualist. And so, you know, I have a ravenous kind of appetite for all these sorts of things. So it's way beyond the tantric art of manifestation, but tantra is what I've studied the most. And the basic formulation around manifestation is like a koan from the universe. It's like a wink from God. It's like a really annoying paradoxical sort of dance that I have definitely not figured out, but never probably will. But the basic rule is, and some guy's blowing leaves, but I hope you can still hear me.
I can hear you. You're fine.
So the basic method, and you know, it's more involved because we're complex creatures, but the basic idea is that the underlying nature of the goddess of reality of you, right, is longing, is desire. That's the mother who wants the baby to walk, but she also wanted the baby, you know? And so we have to be comfortable with the impulse inside of us to want. In fact, the ancient teachings say you're a kama yoni. You are a womb of wanting. You're, you know, and I joke with my students, I'm like, you're a pussy full of desire. Whether you're a woman, you are literally birthing all the time new desires. Now, some traditions say that's a big problem, but many traditions, which I tend to align more with, say, why are you saying that the way that nature is a problem? That's so hubristic, right? So full of yourself to say God is a problem. So you have this sort of all-encompassing embrace of the fact that you really want things. And what Tantra does so beautifully is it breaks it down into categories, because that's what we do and we're scientists. And so it breaks it down into categories like pleasure and success and worldly ambition. And you mentioned wanting to master yoga in a year. I mean, that's fucking hot. That's like... like that about you. It's like, that shows me the force of your Shakti. Now you're young and now you're kind of honing it and channeling it and bringing wisdom to it. And that's Shiva, right? And so there are all these categories, but one of the categories, and here's where the universe starts to like mess with you. It's like, all right, you get to have all these wants and pleasures and success and worldly things and orgasms and bonbons and children and blah, blah, blah. And you should do that. And if you don't do that, you will always have to come back because you will want it. And as long as you're in the longing, you will reincarnate. Right? So
interesting.
Why not do it now?
Uh-huh.
I mean, you even have the ancients talked about when you're in the third to fourth stage of life, like get your RV and go see the world, or like write that book, or like do that thing, because you have to get these longings birthed. Okay. So it's like this radical acceptance of desire, right? And so you're like, yay, I want to join this club. I want all the things, and I want, and oh, and we'll teach you how to get what you want quicker and quicker. We'll shorten the day between wanting and getting, and you're like, yay, sign me up, sign me up, sign me up. And then the teachings say, oh wait, but there's one more desire, and that is the desire to be free from all of these desires.
And there's the crux. Right there is the crux. And we're fed. I think those desires are so fed in our culture that you feel like they're never going to end. How could you ever have them satisfied?
Heather, they will never end. That you just nailed it. They will never end. And so you always do this mudra of like the goddess with the two hands, and here's all your longings. And she's like, yes, I love you. And yes, this is what you were born to do, is Heather, create this podcast, and Katie, create your school. Like, you were born for this longing. I put it in your heart. And then you have this other thing over here that is completely desireless, that when we are manifesting from a place of integrity and the great presence and awareness piece, that's what you spend time practicing with, that thing is informing the desire. Otherwise, we think we want something, we get it, and then we're like, no, this isn't what I want. And so the great secret not only is to have something of deep integrity informing the longings, but also the secret to getting it is that you actually are completely okay with never having it.
Aparigraha.
Exactly.
So challenging, I think, in practice, because it's a cycle that we have to then weigh more heavily on. I loved that idea of that the desire, where is that coming from and what's driving that? Because empty achievement is just that. It's just empty, you know, and it's, you can't ever fulfill that. It's like this thirst that can't ever be slaked because there's nothing that will solve that. But being able to let go of the desire and taking the action and being completely separate from the result is my life's work, is to let myself do the thing, whatever the thing is, you know, try to learn yoga in a year or take on these big projects and then release the expectation of it having to look a certain way when it's done or getting a certain result. And I think that's my challenge, I know, for me.
Well, that's really freaking advanced. Like, that's really amazing. And I also want to speak to the other side of the equation where people can get trapped. And that is, I'm going to free myself from desires. So I'm not even going to participate. And, you know, one of my teachers used to call that, it's the bad Buddhist boyfriend, where he's so unattached to you because he has no detachments. And that's actually a deep attachment to the false idea of non-attachment. Like, the real master is able to eat the orange, fully taste the juice, get the nectar, get the nutrition, let it get move through her, and then eliminate what she doesn't need, and not think again about when am I going to get the next orange, or, you know, that is tantra. It's saying, we know that this life is temporary. And we know that it's just a bridge from one level of consciousness to the next, but we're going to make it this most beautiful experience of a bridge we've ever had. But my God, I get up every morning and go, seriously, I'm going to like have to learn this pattern removal again and again, you know, then, you know, and I didn't, you know, we could do a whole like 4-hour course on this, you know, we spend many, many hours on this. But what we didn't talk about, Heather, is then you have your karma, which is often very different than this beautiful realm you and I are talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you watch that. I mean, there's different types of karma, right? And that karma that you're supposed to work through in this incarnation, and that might, I mean, that could take multiple rounds to work through that as you're accumulating it at the same time and creating more. And I know there's a lot to be said about karma that, like you said, could be a whole different separate topic, but I like the idea with karma that it's something that I'm working through. I'm also creating some, but it's really just a natural law that's occurring. I mean, as a young person, we'd always say, you know, karma is, it's going to bite you. Karma is going to get you. It's going to get yours. And I don't believe that's karma and how that works, but I think we come with things that we're working through, you know, and that we're learning from growth in previous life that we then bring here that we're still working through. Mm-hmm. But I just, it's this evolution. I don't know. It just keeps going and going. People ask me, what do you think the purpose is of being here? From a real nutshell point of view, I think it's evolution and growing beyond just that physical space and connection. Like, how can I connect more deeply? What do you want your legacy to be is often a good way to ask that question, because it has nothing to do with all this, right? The physical. It's always, what did my heart do? What impression did my heart leave? How did I connect? How did I shift and change and become more than I was when I began?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I couldn't have said it better. The purpose is to learn and evolve. And, you know, and I even think when thinking about yoga or meditation or Ayurveda or any of these really cool methods, the methods, like, I'm obsessed with like ancient traditions, and I try to be really respectful of those, and I'm very grateful for them. But I think what people miss out on when they become really entrenched in tradition is the fact that the tradition is an evolutionary faculty itself, mm-hmm. that the energy work or the mantras or the chakra work or the, you know, ways of seeing reality even itself are evolving, and nature is evolving. And to think that we've got some sort of time-stamped model of spirituality that we can just put on every generation is a misunderstanding of the goddess herself, who's always changing.
That's a good point. If we're supposed to be evolving, then the spirituality and the model that we're working under should change as well.
Exactly. And so how to not get attached to your spiritual model while at the same time embracing a spiritual path, because we need structure and we need teachers, but how to also be in the embodiment that is the actual petri dish through which spirit is doing experiments on us, you know?
Oh my goodness, I love that. In a super physical sense, I was meeting with a client this morning. We were talking about Dinacharya, morning routines, and very Vata provoked client, and we're working through setting some better patterns for her. But I've noticed her attachment now to these patterns, these things that she's created in her life, and now they've become very almost like shackles to her, right? I have to do it this way because this is the way. And it's like what you're saying about tradition. And I told her there needs to be fluidity within the structure. So the intention is still there, but it might look different, and that's okay. So don't get so married to, I have to do this first and then this and then this, or I've totally thrown my whole day and now your vata is elevated because of this stress and anxiety you've just created because you didn't do this perfectly. That's not the intention. That's not the point. Neither is that for spirituality. It's not supposed to look the same. So yours and mine could be completely different the way that we show up in the world, but it's nonetheless us connecting to spirit.
Yeah, really important.
So I want to talk, because I know we have, our time is coming close to our end, but I wanted to talk a little bit about your school, because truly I did find your book many years ago, read it. It's dog-eared and marked because it was one of my favorite really practical explanations for Ayurveda for women. And it was the first thing I'd found like that. So I was just, so I felt a little hero worship getting to talk to you today, I'll be honest. But your school, when I was first reading about it, when you opened it, I just was so enthralled with the concept behind it and the focus on the goddess and the way that you teach it. And so I know that you have different things that you do within that space, but tell me more about the Shakti school, kind of how that is grown and evolved and what the intention is for people when they come into that program.
Yeah, thank you for asking me. So we have a year-long program because I felt like we needed a year to begin. And it's a certification program, so you can be an Ayurveda wellness coach, but really it's like for you, and it's for life and for healing and for tapping into all the things we've been talking about today. And I went to several Ayurveda schools and studied, as I mentioned, with the Mohans, and just loved all of my teachers. But I felt like something was, for me, was really lacking. And the piece about authentic, heart-based, really real deal spirituality that deeply, deeply, deeply honors spiritual sovereignty, especially as women who are the carriers of the birthing and the death traditions and the spirit medicine wheel, and all of these things have been carried by women for thousands of years, that peace was not a part of my experience in a way that really filled me and enabled me to release myself from one of my core shackles in this lifetime, which is I need some smart man with a PhD or, you know, a guru on a stage to tell me what to do to be able to connect to God. And I liberated myself from that, and, you know, still have threads of that. Of course, we all want to be told what to do. It feels really good. But and then I created the Shakti School, where I started the school off by saying there are no gurus here. There are many teachers here. I'm one of them. And every teacher here is a half-baked bun in the oven. Nobody here is fully enlightened. Like, if anyone claims to be, let me know. Like, you know, it's like, we're just people who may have studied this a little more and gone on the journey a little longer, but the purpose of, I think, embodied spirituality that doesn't recreate the trauma patterns that we're trying to relieve ourselves from has to start from a place of a woman, because I work with women, and it could be for men as well. It's just so potent for women because we tend to get lost in that power dynamic where a woman owns her own journey. And where she's able to have all the tools and all the methods and all that, because we need that. If you're just like going at this alone, that's not how we were wired. We were wired in relationship. We need guides. We need mentors. We need these teachings. But at the same time, what I see is that most women need self-esteem. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's a really long-winded version of why I created it. And it's funny, I'm the teacher, one of them. And so every year we have this like really long session where we let the women talk about what the year was for them. And I'm just like, oh my God, I really wish I could go to this school. They're like, oh my God, I've made all these best friends. And I'm like, I haven't made any best friends, you know? And so, you know, it's very different to be the teacher in a school than to be the student in a school.
Yes, much like being in a yoga class, they come away enlightened and you're like, I hope that went well. So yeah. I totally get that. The focus though that you have on actually bringing back the goddess and kind of that wild, primitive nature, I think is really beautiful because they get this whole year to experience it. I mean, I've looked at your course in depth. I'm like, I'm already a practitioner, but I would love to go back to this school, right?
I am like, what? I'll give you a good deal, Heather. We need you in the school. Like, yes, it's, you know, we have lots of Ayurvedic practitioners in our school who are like, and they call my staff and they're like, well, I've already done my Ayurveda health practitioner. And we're just like, okay, this is so different. This is like everything we learned. Now let's fully experience it and embody it and integrate it. And, you know, it sounds like I'm trying to sell my own course, but it really is just a completely different approach.
Well, and I've been in very Western style programs, right? Where you're learning a lot of facts, a lot of data. You're learning how to interpret what you're seeing. And so it's very practical in the respect of, you know, how to set up a practice and how to work with a client and how to understand the shrutas and, you know, all of the kind of the nuts and bolts of it. But the focus on the spirituality was very non-existent, really.
Let me give you one quick example. Your listeners can take home and you can take home too, Heather. So the data, the analytics, the patterns, that's super important. And I think, you know, the scientist in me is like, yes, we need to do that. And once we've done that, now, instead of talking about the qualities of the doshas and memorizing them till the cows come home, let's now stop, turn off the prefrontal cortex for a moment. Well, it'll still be on a little bit, but let's enter into this lateral side of our brain, which is the relational. Let's enter into the 19 different proprioceptive senses that your physiology has that moves from the bottom upward, instead of this constant top down. And let's actually feel, and maybe we go outside and do this. Can I feel my longing to connect to the earth element inside of me as bone? And can I go into bone and feel how bone is identical in so many ways to these rocks that are to my left? And can I let point A and point B, bone meeting earth rock, enter into an ecstatic relationship? Because it only takes 30 to 90 seconds for your brain to map where every bone in your body is in relationship to the rocks outside my door. And now, only 30 to 90 seconds, I am now in a completely altered state of consciousness where I am experiencing earth. Rather than being told earth is heavy and moist and dense and blah, blah, blah. And everyone's like, oh my God, these words of Sanskrit, and I quit, right? Like, or I love this and I'm going to nerd out on it. Like, that's my heart's passion, to really enter into an embodied spiritual relationship to those elemental realm. And that's what we do. And it's cool.
It sounds very cool. It's like it's taking all of that left brain and it's drawing in that right brain or the masculine, and that's pulling that feminine in so that we're actually in harmony and balanced instead of being so in the head, we're in the heart.
It's the right brain. It's the right brain. It's so simple. And, you know, all the brain. But yeah.
Sounds really awesome. Okay. I like that you said that other practitioners can do that too, because I know a lot of my listeners are practitioners because, you know, we find each other through these things.
Sarah, my assistant's going to be like, oh my God, you're driving me crazy. So if you guys are listening and you are already an Ayurvedic practitioner and you want to come to our school, you can write us at info@theshaktischool.com and you can say, Katie said I can have the Ayurveda only for Heather Johnson's Ayurveda Life School listeners. You have to say, I'm Heather Johnson's Ayurveda Life School listener. We'll give you a discount.
That is such a gift. Thank you. Thank you. And I know our listeners will love it. So that is such a beautiful thing.
And we start January 12th. So I don't know when this podcast is going out.
Well, we might need to bump it up sooner so we can hear it. We do episodes out on Monday. So we might have to readjust the schedule so you guys can hear this before they begin. So how do they find you? What's your website and how can they track you down?
We're at theshaktischool.com. If you put in the Shakti School, Katie Silcox, you'll find us. And info@theshaktischool.com will get you to my staff. We're on Instagram. Perfect.
I love it. And you're doing a new version of the book, The Healthy, Happy, and Sexy.
There's a reprint coming out. It's basically the same, just a little updated, a little prettier. Yeah. And hopefully 2023, I have a new book coming out. So I'll have to come back on the show, Heather, and we'll talk all about it.
Definitely. I would love that. Well, it was a pleasure to have you on today, Katie. It was a blessing to get to visit with you.
You are just such a light. Can I just take a moment? Yeah. I had no idea what was going to happen today. And I'm like, wow, I feel like I've met a new friend, and I just really appreciate your time and your podcast. And we'll definitely let people know about you on our end as well.
Oh, thank you so much. Have a beautiful day.
Thanks, Heather.
Before you go, was this episode helpful for you? Well, the most helpful thing you can do in return is to leave a review in iTunes. The reviews are what keep the podcast going. And be sure to subscribe and share this episode if you loved it.
You can connect with me online at AyurvedaLifeSchool.com, on Instagram, and on Facebook at Ayurveda Life School. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.